Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hang in
there,
it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show. All right, guys, welcome back to The Smiley Show. We have a guest here that is a rookie on the PGA Tour coming off of the Korn Ferry Tour. Jake Knapp, the long-hitting PGA Tour player, just had a great finish at the Farmers Insurance Open and cashed in pretty nice. And Jake, have you spent all the money yet, or what's the deal? Are we bought anything cool?
No, nothing too exciting, that's for sure. Got my brother a birthday present last night, and then that was about it so far. And gonna do my best to save it the best I can.
Did I read right? Was it $474,000?
Yeah, $477,000, I think it is.
$477,000. I cheated him $3,000. I mean, that's gotta be a pretty dang cool text to get, right?
Yeah, very very surreal. I mean, even last year on Korn Ferry, like I think it was the final check of the year, maybe in I think it was Ohio State, was like my biggest check ever received, or, you know, the largest text ever received from the PGA Tour. And I was like, man, that's just a lot of money. I can't remember exactly. I want to say maybe somewhere around 60, 70 grand, something like that. But
I had a similar text. I think it was because I won on the Korn Ferry like one of the first couple weeks that I played. But then I don't know, later in the year, I finished second at Springfield, and I got a text for like finishing second for like 72 grand or something like that. And I was like, holy crap. Like, I don't know why it didn't hit me the first time, but like the second place and making that much money on the Korn Ferry, I was like, oh, this is sick.
Oh yeah. I mean, I still crack up about it. Cause when I played like my first taste of professional golf at a PGA Tour event was the RBC in 2019. And I was able to squeak by and make the cut, and then didn't play any good on the weekend, but finished in like third to last. And got a check for, I think it was like just under 20 grand or like 18, 19 grand, something like that. And I'm like, this is literally better than the second place finish on the Canadian Tour. I'm like, this is absolutely nuts. So that was a cool feeling.
And you definitely spent some time on the Canadian Tour. I'm going to get into that in just a minute, but let's go back to the Farmers Insurance Open where you had your great finish, and coming down the stretch, or just the back nine, you know, kind of being up near the lead, you know, did you have intentions on like pushing to try to win the golf tournament? Were you trying to hold, like, how did you feel that day with your golf swing? Were you in a good spot mentally to feel like I can keep pushing to try to win this tournament? I know Farmers isn't a place that you can play super aggressive. So just kind of want to know where your head was at on that back nine at the Farmers this past week.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I told my caddy, or we kind of talked about it. Felt like my ball striking was getting a little bit better each and every day. Driver was kind of in and out as the week went on. There was like some stretches during rounds where I'd drive it great, and then sometimes where I wasn't. Unfortunately, my driver got flagged at the Amex as being too hot, and so it got taken for me there. So driver's been a little bit of a struggle this last like week and a half, but we kind of tried to figure it out as the week went on, but just kind of couldn't get it fully dialed. And so, yeah, I mean, I definitely wanted to push it. I mean, my caddy knows I'm never afraid to play aggressive. But at the same time, at this point in my career, I mean, a third place means a lot more than 12th or something like that. Yeah. So yeah, coming down the stretch, I mean, we both kind of said like, all right, you know, 11 and 12, let's just go hit solid shots, make par, and then 13 in, we can start to green light and get after it, especially if you can get it in the fairway.
Yeah.
We kind of went through the pins earlier or the night before, and we talked about how, like, you know, what was it? 15 was in a bit of a bowl, 16 was tough, 17 was in a bowl, and 18 was in a bowl. So it was like, you hit the fairway, you're going to, you know, and you hit it solid, you're going to have good chances. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, missed the fairway on 15, was able to have a good up and down there, and then 16 hit a great shot and somehow left my birdie putt about 4 feet short. and 17 is just like a hard fairway to hit. And, you know, unfortunately just didn't make a great swing, but, yeah. And then 18, I think if I'm playing any other tournament and I'm in any other position, I probably try to get it closer to the pin, but I was just perfectly in between 2 iron and 4 iron. And I was like, you know, I'm not going to try to take too much distance off of a 2 iron.
That's hard
in
to
this
do.
Situation. Yeah, exactly. And I know my tendency when I do that is to hit it left, and that's not a good, you know, a fantastic place to get up and down from. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to hit it stock middle of the green. I'm like, the back edge is, you know, we were still concerned, like there could be a gust, you know, could maybe even come up short. So it was like, let's just hit it stock. If it goes over, it goes into the back part of the green, totally fine. And I was honestly surprised it carried the green too. So that was just a, just so a well struck shot. Yeah.
How far was it?
I want to say we had like 236 front and 240 pin.
Man, so, and in that kind of thick air, it's not necessarily crazy warm there, and you're considering a 4 iron. I mean, that thing had to be smoked. I
mean, well, we didn't really consider at the time. At the time, we were even like, you know, do we just take mini driver and just like pound it over the green and just get up and down? Like, we didn't really even bring up 4 iron. And like after the fact, we talked about it, and I was like, I mean, I hit
hard to
4 iron I hit 4 iron 240 or 236. So it's like, if I nut it, like maybe it carries, and I'm like, dude, I'm not going to hit it in the lake, make bogey, and finish in 10th after like a good solid week. So,
because you had told me you'd hit it in that pond before. When did you do that? That was in another event or what?
No, it was in 2015 when I Mondayed for the Farmers.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay.
I want to say I birdied 17 to get to even par. And I think that I thought the cut was going to be like one under or something, or maybe 2 under or something like that. And so I felt like I needed to make at least birdie, if not eagle. And my brother was caddying for me at the time. And I was like, we're not going for this green unless we can go for it in 2 with an iron. And sure enough, it was like a perfect 3 iron at the time. And I hit it a little thin. I was like just yelling go out of my, and it landed right in the middle of the bank, rolled in the water. And I was like, man, that's a crusher.
So. Oh man. And I'll say this about the 18th at Torrey Pines. The first time I got there as a kid and checked out the 18th, and I'd watched that event so many times over the years on TV, and that pond looks so big on TV with all the moments that have happened over the years. Ball spins back in the water, you know, the moment with Tiger Woods on the 18th hole at the US Open. And I get there, I'm like, that's it? It looks like just a glorified pond, like just a it's not big at all. It's not intimidating, but you just know it's there.
I know, it's a very public course pond. It's a large puddle, really.
But, that's what it is. It looks like you could walk right across it, like that it's just cement underneath it, and it's like two feet high of water is what it looks like. It's not intimidating, but you do know it's there with a 3 iron. I'll say that.
That's for sure. That's definitely right in your viewpoint.
Well, you've also got some good news from the Waste Management Phoenix Open, them calling you this past week and giving you some good news, I hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on a drive home yesterday with my brother and my coach in the car, and we were, the guys over at Waste Management, George and Colby gave me a call, and, gave me the word that I got a sponsor invite just in case I don't get in off my number. I think I'm now second alternate or something like that. So that was pretty cool. The way they were wording it and how it was going, I was like, oh, I feel like they're kind of letting me down soft here. And I was a little bummed. And then they kind of flipped it on me and were like, we'd be honored if you'd play. So yeah, super excited to be, you know, heading back to Arizona tomorrow. So I'm really excited to be prepping for that.
I mean, that just had to be just the best little mini fist pump. Just like, come on, we're finally getting some momentum and playing in the events that I want to play in. And you just recently moved to Scottsdale. So that for you, you've probably feel comfortable going to a golf course that you've seen plenty of times now.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was kind of part of the move as well. It was like, you know, I mean, might as well. I've always kind of admired guys that get the opportunity to have events at, you know, PGA Tour events or big events at their home course. And I'm like, I would love to have a little advantage at some point in one of these things. And so I was like, Scottsdale seems like the right fit for me. And with PXG being out there and still close enough to home, Southern California, right, it's a 5.5 hour drive if I ever need to come back. So, being on the practice there, comfortable on the course. I like the course, feel like it fits my game pretty well. So, I'm pumped. It's going to be an exciting week.
Have you ever been to a Waste Management Phoenix Open?
I have not.
Yeah, I have not.
Yeah. My college roommate went, I want to say either our senior year in school or maybe my first year as a pro, something like that. He went and, I mean, he went once and hasn't gone back. So I think that says it all.
He's retired. He's retired from being a fan at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. I always love the videos that come out, not only from the folks that are running to get a good seat, but also like the end of the day, guys that are wobbling away and off the cart path trying to make it to an Uber. It's quite the scene. And I'll say this, as a pro, the first time that I played, the morning tee time, for the most part, like you'll sometimes get a frost delay at that event. And I remember one year I'm sitting on the putting green about to warm up, and I think we were in a frost delay, so we're kind of just hanging until they gave us the go ahead. And Jake, when I kid you not, like the craziest scene when they let the gates open and you're sitting there on the putting green and you're just watching thousands and thousands of people in these costumes run past you with beers in their hand. It's just the most, you're like, I got to go play golf after this. Like, this is so weird.
Where am I? Yeah. Yeah, my parents were thinking about coming out, and I'm like, I love you guys, but I don't think you're going to enjoy like that event too much. I'm like, I say, you know, wait, come to one later in the year, and you know, we'll find a better one. Plus, they're like, oh, I want to see everybody on 16. I'm like, you don't get to see 16. I'm like, you'll see me hit on 15, and then I probably won't see you till 18 green, because those things, I mean, being out there now in practice, like those bleachers and everything have been up since like probably October, November. So, I mean, it's a full on stadium now for those that 16, 17 and 18.
I'll say this, there is a PGA Tour credentialed area. So for family, my family used to always be able to get to that spot. So just, there might be somebody for you to reach out to on that to make sure if they want to come, they can see you play on 16.
That's good, because I
remember
it.
My wife, and my parents, came out and did the same. I don't remember 17, 18. Also, I was playing with Ricky Fowler, so it was chaos the entire way around. So it was a little nuts. Hopefully you get a great pairing as well to experience like playing with Ricky Fowler there. It's pretty remarkable to say the least.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I kind of want to just hit the rewind button. You're obviously in a great spot now on the PGA Tour, but I want to go back all the way, starting in college at UCLA, and kind of work our way back to 2024. Just kind of take me through the years. You didn't finish at UCLA, so let's start there, and then kind of work our way to when you eventually did turn pro.
Yeah. I mean, I spent my freshman, sophomore, junior year at UCLA, and then went back for my senior year, decided to do Q school kind of during that fall, and didn't get any status, but just kind of had a talk with my parents and was like, listen, you guys can spend another 6 months paying for me to go to school, or I can start trying to make some money now. And, they were nice enough to support me through that and allow me to make that decision. And they kind of just allowed me that. They were like, if you feel like you're ready and it's what you want to do, then, you know, we'll support it. But
yeah,
but it was kind of one of those things I had to support myself the entire time. That was kind of part of the deal. They let me live at home, or, you know, if it were up to them, I'd still live at home, but they let me live at home and travel out of there. So yeah, I mean, I decided to turn pro after Q school and try to do like Latin America Q school and that stuff early. And I remember I lipped out a putt on my last hole, and I'm like, man, that putt's probably gonna be important. And then sure enough, comes down to the end of the event, and I missed out by guaranteed spots by a shot, and I was like crushed. And went to Canadian Q school, missed at that, and then went up to do some Mondays for Canada, and Mondayed into Kelowna, which was like the third event.
What year are we in now?
That was in 2016.
Okay, summer so in 2016. Okay.
Yeah. And so went up there. I played a few events. You know, I played well enough to play my way into the next few events or something. Played a couple that year, and then came back down in 2017 after that, and then won Canadian Q school. So,
okay. So now you're set on that tour.
Yeah. So now I'm set in 2017. Went up there. Probably, I think I finished like top five or something like that in the first event, and played okay in the next couple. And then I was maybe sitting like 15 or 30 or something like that in the points list. And maybe like halfway through the season, my back really started to bother me. And so I went home, kind of got it checked out. Didn't look super great. Went and played the next week, and it was tough, like just kind of walking at that point. So decided to call the rest of that year just a wash. Took the rest of the season off. I ended up finishing like 58 or something like that on the points list. So it retained my status for the following year without playing. I only played, I think, six tournaments. So went and did like, basically I had like two bad bulging discs in like my lower back. So did like decompression therapy and all that kind of stuff for probably like 6 months or something, like 3 days a week for like 6 months. And then I was honestly super pumped for 2018, was super excited, felt super healthy. Was starting to practice like early in the year, had like 4 or 5 months to prep and everything else. And I think this is just like the immature side of me and everything else. I just, you know, I thought I was so ready, and then went up there and just played awful for an entire summer in 2018.
Really?
Yeah. So I just don't think I really knew how to prepare for tournaments and how to truly get myself ready. So 2018 played terrible, missed a bunch of cuts. And even if I made the cut, kind of had like a crummy day on Saturday or Sunday and finished in 30th, and you just don't get any points for that. So, ended up losing my status in Canada in 2018. And was in the off season, I think it was like October. So right when Q school is about to start, and a moment I'll never forget. I'm just in the gym with my buddy. He's going to go run to the bathroom real quick before we start our workout. We have a bath, like a kind of a basketball court in our gym we were working at the time. And, these guys asked if we needed one more, and we used to play pickup basketball every night of the week. And so I was like, yeah, sure, I'll run one while my buddy's getting warmed up. Why not? Or going to the bathroom. Why not? So I jump in there, and like two plays into the game, jump up, come down on a guy's foot, and then roll my ankle terribly and tear three ligaments in my left foot. So the conversation didn't go over too well with my parents on that one. Came in limping, and I was like, man, my life is over. This is done. And then, also at that point, I mean, so I had turned pro in 2016, signed a 3-year deal with TaylorMade out of college, or TaylorMade and Adidas. And so I was set for 2016, 17, 18. So at that point I was basically a free agent. Well, as a free agent, just lost my status in Canada, just rolled my ankle, not doing Q school this year. And that was kind of like the first question mark for me, whether it was like, or where I was like, you know, if I wanted to, I could kind of just stop now, you know. It's like I don't know. It just didn't really seem like it was panning out for me. The timing wasn't good, you know. Never got any sponsors.
Was the passion still there? Like, was the love for the game all still there? Were you like getting that frustrated to where you're like, yeah, like I'm done with this?
Yeah, I think I just got tired of people telling me like, oh, you'll be out there, and, you know, or why aren't you out there, you know, playing in college against Rahm and Spieth and Justin and all these guys who are having so much success. And and I just flat out wasn't. And so yeah, I think I was just kind of fed up with that side of it. And then also, you know, just hadn't had any success of my own. And I have I have a tattoo on the inside of my right arm that says confidence comes from doing. And I just felt like I hadn't done anything yet. So I hadn't like earned the right for that confidence. So I just think I was struggling in that department. And you know, anytime my brain kind of went that direction, I was like, you know, there's nothing else I want to do. Like I had the passion never left. Like I loved practicing every single day. I'm at the course 24/7. I'm not one of those guys that has like a ton of other hobbies and things they love doing. So, whether I played golf competitively or professionally or not, like I love being around the course and that's just my place. So, I had to take, you know, all of October, November, December. I remember I started to kind of make some one footed swings in like kind of January ish. And then,
which foot was it? Left or right?
Left foot.
Ooh, even worse.
And,
I feel like that's
and
awful.
I had kind of one of those like active, like Justin Thomas style footwork where like my left toe came off the ground and I hated that part about my swing. I always wanted to like, kind of like Ricky, I wanted to like punch it into my left heel and post up my left leg. I just thought it looked better. And, so when my left ankle stopped working, all of a sudden that just became how I swing. I was like, wow, this is great. Kind of fixed my flaw. And I got lucky enough to get set up at the end of 2018, the old head pro at my home course, Tom Sargent, who taught Bob May pretty much his entire career and some other guys out on tour. He set me up with a guy who had invested a few times in players in the past, but only really like two different guys, and really nice guy, member at a course nearby. And, you know, we sat down and had lunch. I told him that I don't have the money basically to fund this next season, but I would love to play. And so he was generous enough to, you know, we negotiated a deal where he got a percentage of what I earned and then, you know, but it allowed me to pay for golf and play golf. So I was like, listen, I live at home. Like I don't have a lavish lifestyle. Like my expenses are almost nothing outside of golf. So I was like, if you're willing to take care of it, I'm all in. And, then shortly after that, I won Q school again in 2019 for Canada.
Wow. Two-time Canadian Q school champion, Jake. Yeah,
I don't know if that's the title.
I should have let off with that, man. You didn't tell me that the other day. That was the best way to start.
I must have taken down the two-time champ banner behind me or something. But that was 2019. That was the start of 2019. I won Q school again out at Wigwam. Actually played in the final round of Will Zalatoris, which is pretty funny. And it was kind of one of those moments where both of us, I think, were playing there. And for me, especially seeing him, I'm like, what are you doing here? Like, we both know you're going to get plenty of sponsor exemptions. Like, you don't need to be doing any of this. I was able to win that and got Canadian tour status. And, you know, I think my perspective changed a little bit on everything. I was very appreciative just to be playing and, was proud of like the work I was putting in. And I think a little, forgotten about. I mean, luckily, Strixon signed me.
Who signed you too. It was Mike Dunphy. He's a neighbor of mine, which is why I've always looked out for your name. I've known your name probably since you've been signed by them because Dunphy has told me how good you are. So that's where like I think I probably remember your name just from like UCLA in itself. But then he was like, no, this kid's legit.
Yeah, that's Dump. He was the man. He's a great guy. And he's still my biggest fan. He still texts me and everything else. He's awesome. And they signed me on for 3 years. I remember I asked TaylorMade if I could get a new set of irons for that season and basically got a text back saying like, yeah, it's going to be X dollars per club if you want them. And I was like, that's tough. I'm like, there it is right there.
That's tough. You know, like, I mean, you get free clubs, free balls for so long. And then until you get to a point where it's like, wait, I got to start paying for this. Like this, that's a reality check for any pro golfer. It's like, this is where club companies see me, but I know I'm way better than what they're seeing right now. So that had to be a tough pill to swallow for sure.
For sure. Yeah, that one hurt, especially like I'd been with them since I was like a sophomore in high school. So it was like, you know, it's almost like one of those where you're like, come on, guys, like it's me. Like you've taken care of me for so long. Like, you know, I always represented you guys well and everything. But, you know, it just comes down to performance. And like I've always loved that part of the sport in general. You know, like I love basketball, baseball, soccer, all that kind of stuff. But I always wanted to be the one to take the last shot. If it was a baseball game, I want to be the one that's at bat. Like, I just, I always wanted to be that person. So that's why I think golf was always kind of my calling. It's like, I want the ball in my hands at all times. So, and there's good side of that and bad side. It's like, you know, if you play poorly, it's only you to blame. Play well, you get all the credit, but I love that part of it.
Well, can we fast forward a little bit to, I mean, eventually, like, the story that kind of broke out, and we had James Nitties on our podcast about a couple weeks ago, who I'm sure you've gotten to know a little bit through the Corn Ferry Tour, and he had kind of mentioned that your storyline was interesting because you worked at called a restaurant turning into a nightclub called the Country Club, which for a golfer, it's like similar to when I was at LSU, the bar that we all went to was called Bogey's. So it's like, you know what? It kind of goes hand in hand. It's like, if your parents ask where you're going, say, I'm going to the Country Club, you know, just got to get some work done. But for you, when did that job become open for you? Because I think you were on and off the Canadian tour and just looking for a paycheck at the time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So like we were just saying, like 2019, I went up there and I won twice and earned Corn Ferry status. So I went on Corn Ferry during that COVID season and played decent to start. I had like a top 10 in Mexico and was like, all right, like, there we go. Get the year going. And then the season shut down. And, unfortunately was just like never really able to find my footing after that for some reason. Just, I don't know if it was time away from competition or what. It really was not able to, you know, get in a routine. But after those 2 years, just made little to no money, didn't play well at all. And so I lost my status and, you know, I played 20 and 21. And so I lost my status after 21 and then go to Q school. And the bummer about
these are 4 long years, like just going through all this. This is a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been a while. I mean, I've been professional now for 8 years, so you know, I know people call me a young man still and all that kind of stuff, but I've been at it since I've been at it since 22, 21 ish. So I mean, losing status there stinks. And what a lot of the people don't realize is, like, when you lose status on the Corn Ferry, you lose your status, which means you're probably not playing very well. And then they're like, congratulations, come pay X amount of dollars. You're going to do Q school in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you get a few months to reset, prepare, get ready. It's like, you're playing crappy. I hope you can figure it out next week, because that's going to set up your next 10 months. So, so that one sucked. I mean, I had to go all the way back to first stage. I went to like an overflow site in Chicago and it was like 80 Corn Ferry guys, because it was all the guys kind of waiting to see if they were going to have status or not, and was able to get through there, and then went to New Mexico for second stage and just wasn't my week, didn't play well, finished in like 30th and didn't get through. And literally as soon as that finished, I went home, remember talking to my brother, and I was like, dude, I need to do something. Like, I need a job, whatever. And at the time, or he still kind of has his own real estate deal, and he's just like, just come work for me, I'll help you out with her. And I was like, I don't want handouts, I don't want people just to throw me a few bucks here and there. And so I started looking at places that would hire like a bar back or maybe security or do something like that, and went to a few places. They said they were kind of full, and then the same owner owns a lot of different bars in our area, and they were like, oh, there's this bar up in Costa Mesa that could use some new security if you're looking for that. And I was like, oh, I know that place isn't like too crazy, like I'll give it a go. And, I started working there in October of 21, worked there all the way until May of 22, right after I worked there the weekend after my first Canadian Tour event in 22, but, worked there for like 8-9 months.
Man, just listening to you hear you say that and going back, you know, 20 minutes to the beginning of our conversation, talking about what it was like coming down the stretch to try to win a PGA Tour event. And then just hear you kind of go through the last 10 minutes of where you've been in this crazy game. It reminds me of the journey, not quite nearly as long as Eric Coles, but a guy that just grinded and grinded and grinded and just kind of kept hitting the rock, as Max Homa has said plenty of times, and eventually that rock is going to break. And for you, I mean, I can't imagine the amount of nights that you just sat there dealing with probably the most bullcrap stuff of drunk arguments and throwing people out, where you're sitting there thinking to yourself, is like, man, is this like what life has in store for me? You know, like, is this kind of you know, where I'm heading. Like, were there moments like that at 1 a.m. where you're just sitting there like thinking like, man, this is tough right now?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, cause working somewhere like that, I mean, I was there every Friday, Saturday night, you know, I worked New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve and Christmas. I worked Christmas wow. night, actually. That was a wild one. And then, you know, Halloween, all that kind of stuff. But even just like the regular every Friday, Saturday night from get there at 8:30, leave. If we were lucky, we'd leave by like 2:30, but usually it was like 3. And yeah, it was just, it was definitely, I mean, cause most of the time you're just kind of standing there with a flashlight, just making sure nobody's doing anything they're not supposed to. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in those quiet nights. I mean, towards the last like 5 months, I was the one standing at the front door, checking IDs and doing all that kind of stuff. And it was like, man, what am I doing here? You know, it's like, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing, but you know, I had somebody give me a good piece of advice. It's like, you are where you are for a reason. So yep. if you don't want to be there, work your way out of it. And, so, you know, I decided not to play many mini tour events before that Canadian season two. I was just like, you know, I'm just going to grind, you know, I'm just going to practice, get better at the things that I've always said I needed to get better at. And I'm just going to smash those things head on, stopped avoiding all the little stuff that maybe I didn't, you know, didn't give the full attention to. And just that kind of gave me like the realization. It's like what a, not like what a waste, but, it's like what a waste it would be to like stop, you know? And cause I felt like if I would have stopped at any of those moments, I would have been like, you haven't even tried yet. You know, it's like, you said you're a professional golfer and you said you've been giving it a go, but it's like, you haven't given all of it. I, you know, it's like, I made sacrifices and stuff, but I was like, I can be doing a lot more. And so, I think my close family and friends have looked over the last 2 years, and I think there's been a drastic change of like how much time I spend on task and how I treat my, you know, I mean, I treat it very much like a round the clock job. You know, I don't really do much else. It's what I want to do. So like I've said these last couple of years, it's like, I just want to feel like I squeezed every last drop out of my potential. And, you know, that's just kind of been the goal for the last 2 years now.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that rededication, it sounds like just the being in a different place and having the perspective to realize like, hey, I still have the talent, but I really need to go put the work in. And that's probably why you are where you're standing now. But I have a couple more questions about the country club, because it's such a fascinating thing. We don't have many barbacks on the PGA Tour or security bouncers. Is there anybody on the PGA Tour that's currently playing right now that you feel like can correctly identify a fake ID better than you?
That's a great question. Probably not.
You would think so, right?
I got pretty good after a while. As soon as you get it in your hands, like it's so funny because, like, you know, buddies in college and stuff had fake IDs. Like, I never looked old enough, so I kid you not, I could never even fake it if I wanted to. And so there would be people that would come up and they hand me their ID. And the first thing is always like confidence and eye contact. You can just tell when a person's handing you something that's fake. And sometimes it's the way it looks. Sometimes it's just the way, as soon as you pick it up, it either feels like a piece of cardboard or it's super thin or whatever it might be. And like, I wouldn't even have to look at it. I'd be like, you can have this back and you guys have a nice night. So yeah, it was
so what are you
funny.
Supposed to do if I have a fake ID and I was gonna hand it to you? What do I not need to look at you and not be confident?
No, you gotta look, be confident, maybe try to distract me, ask me how the night's going, ask how it is inside, but don't hand it to me and then look immediately at your toes and, you know.
You're saying that eye contact and having confidence is what you need to have. I thought you were saying the opposite. Okay. That was like, what are you supposed to do then? Because I had it all wrong in my head.
you gotta go up there with some confidence. Can't go in there knowing that you got your big brother's ID and you're not 29 years old when you're really 19. That's a tough one.
we need to find a way to clip this and tag all of the high school seniors that are heading to college next year to really just give them an idea from a true pro here that can sniff out these fake IDs.
Yeah. There's also, I mean, it's funny too, cause there's some bars around where we are that take pride in taking fake IDs. Like they have a shoebox full of them and they love taking them. And then there's other places that are like, if you just show any form of identification, you know, you're good. And like the funniest thing is the amount of people that have come up to me that are quite obviously 20, whether they're like 30, 40, 50 years old, and they don't have an ID. And I'm like, listen, I'd love to let you in. I'm like, we have a very strict ID process where if you don't have an identification, like, I can't let you in. If something happens and police show up and they ask for IDs, I can't let you. So the amount of people that were upset with me night in, night out, just 10, 20 times a night of like, look at me, I'm obviously 21. It's like, that's congratulations, but you don't have an identification and I can't let you in. I'm so sorry.
All right. So you were like 20 pounds heavier, right? But you're the guy that really was the muscle behind you, a guy named Tim, you mentioned to me. He was the guy that said, hey man, you got any problems? Like, he's the guy to you know, pony up and say, you know, yeah, we got any issues. This is, it gets settled real quick.
Yeah. To give you an idea, I mean, we have Tim, who's our head of security, and he's the nicest guy in the world. I mean, if you work hard and do what you're supposed to, he'll treat you right. I mean, he always, like, when anytime I had tournaments, he knew that this was a side gig and he understands that. So, he let me do whatever I needed to do. But when I first walked in my first night, I started with this guy, Juwan, and Juwan is trying to also play professional football. Super good dude. We're still good friends now. And we both start the same night, and the top three guys who have been there the longest, I mean, Tim being the head of security, this other guy, Big T, and he's, you know, big human being, 6'4", and also just the nicest guy. And then we had another guy nicknamed Alpha, and Alpha was about,
what was your nickname?
Nothing.
Napdog or something, just something.
No, no, they just call me whatever they wanted to. Yeah, exactly. Everybody knew that I was a nice guy, and I wasn't the one that was going to get in the middle of anything if I didn't absolutely need to.
Yeah,
especially once they all found out that I played golf, it was almost as if everybody was trying to protect me, which was pretty funny.
You need to protect your wrists and your hands too, man. That's the last thing you need is to break a hand during all that.
For sure. So no, we had a good crew then, and some guys who were willing and able to step in if anything was needed.
Did you hear from any of those guys after your big finish at the Farmers?
Yeah, Tim reached out immediately, sent me a message. Juwan sent me a message.
That's cool, man.
The other guys I haven't talked to, but yeah, Tim still reaches out every single week, and he's well connected in like the sports kind of industry. He played at USC for football, played in the NFL for a little while. Dad played in the NFL for a really long time. So he's always reaching out with, you know, go see this guy for PT, for training, whatever, you know, and obviously football and golf are a little bit different, but I always appreciated talking to him about, you know, playing in any sport at a high level, you know, is pretty special. So you can always learn something from anybody, but yeah, they've been awesome reaching out and sending messages and all kinds of stuff.
Man, that's awesome. That's so cool. And I just kind of had mentioned that you said to me that you were around like 10 to 20 pounds heavier. I'm not sure if that was muscle or not. And I was reading something online that had mentioned that if you did something other than the golf, you would be a fitness instructor, which I kind of led to, all right, what do we know about Jake Knapp as the golfer right now? And it's that you can absolutely drop mail and you can just hit nukes. And so I have to ask you, from a fitness standpoint, what do you bench, bro? You know, what do you bench? what do you squat, man? What's your max?
No, literally. I've done a good job of lightening all that stuff up over the past few years.
Did you go meathead at any point? Like, or did we get in? Oh, let's 100%. Go. All right. Throw some numbers at me.
The heaviest, what was it? The heaviest I ever squatted was 365 for... four, I believe. Four, six. I'd have to look. I have a whiteboard in my garage that has it all written down. And then the most I ever benched was 260 for two.
So, 260 for two. Okay, you're gonna have to send me a picture of this whiteboard, because this is gonna definitely make it in. Because when people see videos of you that break the internet of your golf swing going viral with your driver, which is probably why your driver got flagged in the first place. It's like, wait, this guy hits 190 ball speed and it looks like he's swinging it like a wedge. Well, let's turn back the page a little bit, and this guy can move some weight back in the day.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I still can. I mean, I will say the one big investment I made after last season getting out here, is I upgraded my home gym. So I've always had, since 2020 ish, or basically like just before COVID, and it was very good timing. I was like wanting to do it forever. I always wanted to work out at home, because the gym, that I worked out at forever, growing up, ended up closing during COVID. And so I kind of wanted to have my own place. I'm not a big public gym guy. I like old, dirty, rusty gyms.
Yeah.
Mm. And so I've always had a squat rack and some cable stuff and everything else. But then I decided to upgrade dumbbells, new barbell, trap bar, kettlebells. So a bunch of different stuff. So now I have dumbbells going from 10 to 150 or 110 pounds. I got like, I don't even know how much in weight, but a lot.
110 pounds.
Have everything.
I would just look. I would just stare at those. Yeah. Those would just be something that's like a trophy. Yeah. How often do the 110s come?
Yeah,
out?
We could. Not too often. That's more of an off season thing. So yeah. I usually don't touch above 90 this time of year. But yeah, I mean, I love training. I mean, I've honestly always loved the bodybuilding community, as my old like college teammates know and all that kind of stuff. Like I almost follow bodybuilding more than I follow professional golf. So
really,
yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't as much now, I should say. I did through college and early professional life, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I always loved it. I've actually formed a small relationship with Steve Cook, which some people might not know, but, he's big in the bodybuilding and fitness world. Yeah. I mean, he was the first, men's physique champion in the Olympia, which like the Olympia is like the Olympics for bodybuilding. And there's different divisions and whatnot. So you have like the open class, you have the 212 class, which 212 is the max weight. Now they have classic physique, which Chris Bumstead's been the champion now for, I think, 4 years. And then he was the first men's physique champion, which is like kind of more of like just a buff guy. It's not like crazy over the top. It's not like crazy roided out, anything like that. He's probably, if I had to guess, 6'2 and 215 pounds, but he's just ripped, great shape. And he's a diehard golfer now, which is hilarious.
Great.
So, I think he actually might be coming out to the Waste next week. I'm trying Sick. To finagle him, get him to come out. But yeah, so, I mean, I've just always loved that side of it. I've always just loved training, loved working out hard. A lot of the guys at my, a few of the guys I grew up with working out and whatnot kind of chased bodybuilding. And, so yeah, it's always been a sport and whatnot that I've been fascinated with.
Okay. You know, I have to ask you, have you ever entered into a bodybuilding competition?
But it's always been my dream.
Okay.
That's always been the side hustle. That's always been something I want to do, whether I do it when I'm 60, 50, 40, I don't care. But eventually, well, I'd love to do something like that.
Invite me. I'm going. I'm going to be your hype man, the guy out there. Deal. Just, you know, the foam finger, you know, or I can be the tan guy, you know, whatever, to make sure that, that we get everything.
No problem. Yeah.
What would be your biggest hurdle for bodybuilding? What body part for you is like the hardest one to get right for bodybuilding, I guess?
I mean, nowadays, probably my legs again, just cause I still love training legs. It's my favorite thing to train over the last couple of years, but I had a knee issue the last couple of years with like tearing my quad tendon. So, funny enough. I mean, it was like a wear and tear injury. So yeah, for sure. But it happened when I was on the golf course. All of a sudden my quad just started to like tighten up. I'm like, this is really weird. And I was just walking like nothing crazy. And it felt like a crazy Charlie horse. And all of a sudden I couldn't bend my leg for a week. And I was like, man, this isn't normal. So it's much better now, but just overall getting like the mass on is the hardest thing. Cause you can't miss meals. You have to stay on top of everything. And with
so
our
much
schedule,
eating, it sounds like.
Yeah. And I love that part. Like I stay in Airbnbs every week. I cook every meal. That's kind of my side thing. Yeah. But, and kind of for that reason, I've never been a big foodie. Like I enjoy good food. Don't get me wrong, but I very much eat for fuel. So I eat the same things day in, day out, very much like my diet and my training program is very much similar to a bodybuilder basically.
All right. So you had to Whole Foods on a Sunday or a Monday when you get into town, what are you buying then?
Same things pretty much every week. I'll buy a big bag of jasmine rice. I'll buy ground turkey, ground chicken, either broccoli or asparagus. The same couple different like hot sauces that I always get.
Mm-hmm.
And then that'll be about it. And then I'll eat breakfast at the course, and probably snack on lunch there. So then usually I'll have like a meal before I go to the gym, and then shake when I get back, and then probably a meal before I go to bed as well.
I mean, fuel is power. And we talked about that power. And where with your driver are you, like, where are you cruising on the golf course with ball speed wise?
Ball speed, probably like high 80s, I would say, mid to high 80s, like 85 to 89, somewhere in that, if I'm,
yeah, same here. Guess. Yeah, it's probably same here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what's the fastest you've ever gotten?
I know I've Well, I mean, I have a video last year of getting, I think it was like literally 199.8, like on the range in Ohio.
We round up.
Yeah, exactly. 200 for sure. But I remember I worked with Mark Blackburn for a short stint, and
yeah,
we were hitting in at his facility.
Yeah, here in Birmingham.
And yeah, absolutely.
He's 15 minutes down the road.
We were doing a ton of wedge work at the time. We were working together. And then he was like, also, I need to make sure you train your speed because I can't have you getting slower doing all this wedge stuff. So like, you need to make sure you train to go fast. And so we did some speed work, you know, just kind of that day messing around. And he was just like, all right, that's pretty quick. And I'd never gotten over 136 club head speed. That's always been my cap. And
100 what is like 130 what?
136 was my
dude,
highest.
Dude, it doesn't look like you're moving the club that fast. Like,
yeah.
Like, do you just have like a crazy stiff shaft? Like, or do you feel like you're swinging like it really hard? Cause it doesn't look fast at all.
No, I mean, that's always kind of been my thing with training, to be honest, is I mean, the physical side to it with like growing up watching Tiger all my life, I always thought that he just looked physically dominant. You know, like you watched him at a course, his posture was good. He looked strong.
Yeah.
And I just looked intimidating to me. So I was like, man, I want to step on the first tee and I want to intimidate guys. And so that kind of started it. But then, yeah, I mean, for me, training has always been one of those things where it's like, if I can get it to, let's say 127 club head speed with driver, I want to be able to swing it at 127 with the least amount of effort as possible. So if I can just get stronger and get faster and have it still go the same speed with less effort, I mean, ideally it should get put less stress on my back and wrists and shoulders and all that. And for the most part, I just let my body move how it wants to move. I mean, everybody kind of has their own swing and their own deal. Yeah. And I feel like if you swing a club long enough, your body's going to just kind of figure out a way to do it. And so I've tried to change a few things and manage it in a certain way. But for the most part, I kind of just let my body move how it wants to. And if that's the speed it wants to go at, then I'm all for it. So I definitely have levels, and I can definitely go a lot faster with that on course speed. To me, usually my number one swing thought is smooth, like cruise it. Like I try not to swing too fast, try not to go too crazy. You know, you'll definitely know when I go after some. I'm sure there'll be a few at some point this year, but you'll definitely be able to tell when I'm going at it.
Are you playing Vedanta in Mexico?
Yeah, I will be there.
Send it, brother.
Send it. I mean,
it is, it's a funny. Full send fest.
I looked through some of the tournament. I tried to pick a few tournaments this year that I thought fit my game well based on the courses and whatnot. So I looked through some of the past champions and guys who hit it far and maybe have similar attributes to me. And I saw that Finau won that one. I was just like, all right, let's put a little star around Mexico. Apparently, that's going to be
you're going to love that place.
Good course if you hit it far.
You're going to love that place. A lot of the players are hitting 6-5 and 4 irons into some par 4 greens where you're going to have 8-9 irons. So that'll be a huge advantage that week. But and as it goes to strategy, you kind of just talked about how you want to be smooth at 127. You know, a lot of players that are really long take a lot of pride and have a bit of an ego to how far they hit the golf ball. Like they'd rather be top 10 in the driving statistic than top 10 in the scoring average because they hit it so far. Like for you, do you feel like you have to be one of the longest players on tour? Is that the type of strategy you take into a golf course week in, week out? Are you a guy that just, he kind of picks his way around, or are you somebody that always hits driver whenever you can?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. So, I mean, that was kind of like last year for me, is I felt like everybody always told me that the Corn Ferry didn't suit me well, or like we'd show up. Nothing ever pissed me off more than we'd show up to a course that's just big and open and no trouble, and guys would be like, oh, you must love this week. And it's like, what's telling you that? Like, I hate open courses. I mean, look at how I played in the desert the other week. I hate open courses with big fairways and big area. Like, I have a tough time focusing. It just doesn't, I need to figure out how to play better on those some weeks. But But yeah, so I'm not a big fan of those courses. And I think last year was big for me because I proved that I can play on a lot of different styles of courses, whether it's long, short, tree lined, open, links,
you
whatever.
You played at Sony.
Yeah. So, I mean, Sony putted bad on the weekend, but yeah, I mean, everybody was like, oh, Sony's a, you're not going to hit many drivers and it's short, tight dog legs and whatever. And it's like, okay, so it's like Canada, you know, like I'll go hit 2 iron everywhere and I'll have a 9 iron contest. Like I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So I've always tried to be as well-rounded as I possibly can. I mean, obviously my length, not everybody has the ability to do that, but if you would have put me on tour 2 or 3 years ago or 4 years ago, like, yeah, I'd be ego chasing and I'd just be swinging out of my shoes every time and hitting it all over the planet. But I kind of know I'm comfortable with who I am. Like, I know I can swing it fast. Like, it's, you know, it just kind of is what it is. And it's funny when some guys, you know, whether they think they hit it super far or they want to have a contest and this and that, whatever, it's like, I, you know, it's just not for me. Or when somebody says like, oh, you're only number 3 in driving distance this week, so-and-so is faster. And it's like, okay, like,
it's fine.
Good for them. You know, like, I'm okay with it. That's fine. Like, I know I can move it quick. Like, I'm just trying to play the best golf I can. I'm trying to shoot the lowest score. Like, whether that means I choke up and hit every drive at 120 club head speed or I lengthen out and swing everyone at 131, I'll do whatever's necessary and whatever the course calls for.
So you're telling me like 2 or 3 years ago when you were teeing off, you would have a protein shake in your back pocket and raw eggs in your front pocket just after tee shots.
I mean, I still have a protein shake in my bag every week. Three or four seasons. That's my thing. I hate eating on the course. I can't stand it. So I just have a protein shake the turn and I go about my business.
and you mentioned the gym that you have at your own home. Is that that to me, like I picture you being like a Bill Belichick cutoff hoodie and cutoff on the sleeves. Is that the workout attire for you?
I'm a sweatpants and hoodie guy. And if you don't see the sweat through the hoodie, you ain't working hard enough. So
that's my man. God, print it on a t-shirt.
I'm old school in that way. I hate the matching fits into the gym and all that kind of stuff. Like if you see me in the gym, I'll probably be wearing like either Vans or crappy high tops or something or whatever. It's just like, I don't know. It's just more my thing. I'm not a workout gear guy or anything like that. And, my gym's dirty and dusty and, you know, there's stuff written all over the place. And
I love that. I mean, we got the Michael Jordan, picture behind you. Just, I'm here for that. And so you said Airbnbs, you know, that you rent those throughout the year, you cook your own food, and any player that I've ever kind of talked to or, you know, asked about like, hey, where you staying? And if they're like a guy that always stays in Airbnbs, those are the guys that are always traveling with like their Xbox or PlayStation. Are you one of those guys?
I used to be.
I had you pegged. I feel like you got to be like a Call of Duty guy or like a something like that.
Yeah, I'm a big video game guy. I mean, I'm talking to you right now on my gaming laptop. I'm a big video game guy. I love that stuff. I used to travel with it more. I don't really anymore. If I was going to be gone for like 7 weeks or something like that, and I really wanted to, then I would bring it. But these days, I mean, I'm not really traveling much more than like 3-4 days a week. So I just let it stay at home. But yeah, my place in Arizona, I have my nice, I mean, it's right in the middle of my living room. My place isn't too fancy. It's simple, just golf clubs and gaming. So, but I have that set up. I play Apex and Call of Duty mostly.
Okay. Bring Verdansk back or no?
Hopefully. Golly. I don't play much Call of Duty anymore because I just think it's terrible now. But
it's not great. I had to quit when I had a baby, but man, during COVID, there was nothing better waking up at 9 a.m. and all the boys are on and there's just nothing going on during the day. So we just grind until we get hungry at lunchtime.
Yeah, that was like our routine. Like since I was one at the gym stuff, it was literally, you know, I have a group chat of, you know, 10 guys or something like that. And we've all been friends forever. And so, and some of them still live around me. So, I mean, we would just text each other in the morning, we'd get on. And then once we'd get off to eat, everybody would come over. We'd all work out together, go back home, play until midnight, you know, and it was just, that was the life.
Is your gamer tag Jaden Knapp Golf?
It is not. It's nap time though. So
it's nap time. It's, oh, I like that. Time. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
mine's Sid the Sniper.
I was the bot
that just kind of was the, you know, when we played Fortnite, I was the guy that always had, I was like the medic, you know, I was just the cleanup crew, if you will. So, you know, I was
who's
there for
the
morale.
Who's got the meds? Yeah.
I was there for morale, you know, the grenade guy. I was always, you know, just Mr. Utility, man. And 100%. For Dance, I had to ask this too. Where was y'all's drop spot? Ours was hospital.
We went to military.
We never saw each other then. So we were right in the middle of it, on top of hospital every single time.
That is awesome. I love it.
it was a heck of a grind. And the last question on video games. So did you play any like Tiger Woods games? Like were those some of the ones you grew up playing?
For sure.
Yeah. Did you play the PGA Tour courses this year that you're like, I'm excited to see like it in person and not on a video game?
I didn't. I think, gosh, what was it? The only, we kind of got into it for a little while. Once Call of Duty got kind of bad, we played PGA Tour, those different games for a little bit.
Are those any good?
And I was, they're okay. Like, yeah. You know, I mean, they're fun. Like you go and play them with four guys and just have a good time and make little bets and whatnot. And it's a fun time, but I always kind of was a little biased towards what courses we were going to play. Like I always wanted to play Torrey. I mean, Torrey's always just been one of my favorite courses ever. And then also I always pick the ones that I've played before. So I kind of knew the idea of as long as they made the video game correctly, this slope should be here. Ball should go this way. And it was give myself a little insider information.
It was like Tiger Woods. I think it was like 07 is the game that I distinctly remember to be able to hit the power up with the B button to get the drive and then controlling the spin while the ball's in the air. I mean, although like graphic
mash spin.
It just like, and then you're just changing in all the directions based on like how it's flying into the green. So I miss playing that game. The graphics probably, if you played it now, you'd be like, I can't believe I was okay with like this, like how it looks, but
yeah. Oh, literally. I mean, it's so funny when I look at that stuff now, cause we still, you know, like I'll still have like my Nintendo 64 set up sometimes and play on that thing. And I'm like, it's hilarious that this is like revolutionary, you know, not that long ago either, which is nuts. I mean, even now I play in a PC versus an Xbox and I'll come back and like, look at one of my buddy's Xbox or look at my brother's or something like that. I'm like, how do you play on this thing?
Yeah. That's
I'm
what like, you'd be saying it. In my house too, but I don't get to play anymore. My setup was always an issue. I would be like sitting so far away from the TV, but it was all just about like having my morning cup of coffee and just having good vibes with the boys.
That's the thing. That's what people don't realize too. It's like, I 99% of the time, if I'm playing video games, I'm playing with like some buddies because I'm, you know, want to talk to somebody, haven't seen them in a while, whatever it might be. I'm like, I very rarely, if ever, sit down and just play video games by myself. And if I do, it's probably for 30 minutes. And I'm like, all right, this is boring. I'm getting off.
And as soon as if I would have ever bought like a PC gaming laptop, and because that would be the moment that I like would take trying to be better at video games seriously. And my wife would be like, wait, are you seriously going to invest in becoming a better video game player? And so I never was able to take the leap into actually getting a good gaming setup. So, and probably rightfully so, I didn't need to be doing that while I was playing video games. For the most part, I was playing like crap. So I probably didn't need to be playing at all anyways.
I know. That was kind of my thing is I was like, you know, I've had some tournaments where I've played well and brought my video games, and I've had some where like I brought my setup with me and traveled with all this junk and then I don't even open it for 3 weeks. Yeah, exactly. It's like I got all these different things. I'm like, how about we just leave it at home and like we enjoy playing video games when we're home and then that's it. And so that's kind of what it's turned into now.
All right, it's nap time. Sid the Snipe and I, we might have to do a little rendezvous and play some get our setup on live and we'll play something together because
heck yeah.
It's just gotta be after bedtime. It's gotta be after bedtime.
Deal. That's the only time I play. I'm not a during the day guy.
Perfect. Well, I love it. Well, I mean, shoot, I feel like this was a fantastic conversation, and Jake, looking forward to seeing you at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. I know you're just thrilled and excited about playing that event, but also getting off to a great start on the PGA Tour. I mean, just kind of last thoughts on what you're looking forward to the most the rest of the year. Is there one particular event, or just really, you know, continue to try to play well to play it? Get into some of these signature events.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to just really get into those signature events, obviously. And there aren't too many events that I'm crazy looking forward to. I am looking forward to the Canadian Open. My mom's from Canada, and so we always get some family that comes out for that event. And so that's a fun one. Then I've played that course before as well. So that'll be a good one to go back to. But yeah, I mean, ideally play well enough to, you know, maybe work my way into some majors. And, you know, for the most part, I've kind of stopped setting external goals, and I just want to go and, you know, keep playing well, get myself in contention, and just try to play the best I can. Feel like every week, feel like I left everything out there. No regrets. So just going to let it go.
Well, I look forward to following you out on the PGA Tour as I'm on the ground most weeks, and looking forward to watching some of these bombs. And if I feel like you're kind of lacking in the speed department, I'm just going to keep a protein shake in my back pocket when I follow you. So when I'm out there and I hand you something, say, hey, man, like, you need to eat your spinach like Popeye, and I'm going to give it to you. You just got to take it and eat it or drink it and just be okay with it.
Deal. I'll roll with it. I can do that. Just give me a little chirp and I'll get it going. No problem.
All right. I love it. All right, man. Well, thank you for joining, and looking forward to seeing you over in Phoenix.
Of course. Thank you, Smiley. Thanks for having me. I'll see you guys soon.
Absolutely.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.